Great pleasure today to welcome Jack Marshall and Kathleen Frazier to the Poetry Center and to the campus. Before I introduce them, I would like to extend an invitation. Immediately following the reading, there'll be a reception for the poets. Immediately following the reading, there'll be a reception for the poets in the chapel at Ecumenical House across the street from the campus. That's just on the other side of 19th Avenue at 190 Denslow Drive. And we would like to invite all members of the creative writing staff and all students of poetry in the creative writing program. So please come and have some refreshments and talk to the poets immediately after the reading. Jack Marshall and Kathleen Frazier, who are really Mr. and Mrs. Jack Marshall, have been in San Francisco for some time, and this is the first reading, the first opportunity we've had to hear them on campus. They come to San Francisco having established very considerable reputations in New York. Kathleen Frazier was one of the four poets who read at the Poetry Center at the YMHA in New York on a program called Discovery 64. That year she won the Dylan Thomas Poetry Award. She's published very widely. Her magazines, the magazines in which she has appeared include New Yorker Nation, Poetry Chicago, Hudson Review, El Cuerno Emplumado, Trobar, and others. She's has also written two children's books, one a fiction, a work of fiction, the other a collection of play poems based on the 70 games being played in the Bruegel painting. Her book, Change of Address, was published by Kayak, that's by George Hitchcock's Kayak Press. Her husband, Jack Marshall, has written poetry, short stories, plays, and an African dialogue. He's published two books of poems, The Darkest Continent and Rifts and Changes. He also has appeared in many magazines, New World Writing, Epoch, Contact, Poetry Chicago, New Yorker Nation, and so on. And in 1964, seven of his poems were published in the Hudson Review. Kathleen Frazier has read a good many times in and around San Francisco under the auspices of the Pegasus program. Jack Marshall has read under a similar arrangement in New York, sponsored there by the Academy of American Poets. And he has also done a reading of translations from the work of the Italian poet Ungaretti at the Guggenheim Museum in New York. The first of the two poets to read will be Kathleen Frazier.
Glass. My relationships have become glass, with the clarity of windows that are very clean. Through the glass I can see you and my need for you. It is shining the way sun does on those fat blue days of sky everywhere. How much simpler to live in a house with dirty windows, leaving a thumbprint in the dust now and then, small clues to sustain the fact of us. In that house, all is covered lightly with delicacy. Each feels his own strength move in him, but would wear dark glasses to shield himself, as the dust on windows masks the light. Knowing you in the dim light, loving the half light, how safe it felt to see only partly.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to start with sort of a quiet poem, because I think it's hard when you're first getting used to a poet's voice and their style to hear something that has a lot of things moving in it. But the next poem, which is the poem that my book was named after, Change of Address, is sort of more of a collage poem, having really to do with identity and wanting very much to have the right to change constantly. And I think the anger that moved behind the poem was against that whole collective thing of, as you're growing up, people wanting to categorize you and decide what you're going to be or what you're like. And I was always fighting against this. And this is what motivated the poem. Change of address. When the ring gleamed white and your chair hugged the edge of it, and I led an elephant into the tent with my skin like gold lamé and black mesh snaking the length of my legs and hair of pomaded waves curling red to the waist. When I leaped to the back of the elephant, scaling his 5,000 wrinkles, yes, feeling his huge bones lurch and the canvas ripping up night near my neck and all the lights blazing. When I slid down his hairy trunk to lie flat in the sawdust under the 5-cloved foot, waiting with the old silk handkerchief over my face, did you think you were at a circus? Or the year I wore purple velvet and a torn wedding veil with a little blue fan spread over my pale thighs and hovered near the ceiling pouring tea, and good omens were predicted when the oatmeal cookies were passed, and you cried out, "The recipe, the recipe!" And then when I hitched a ride on that Spanish rooster, waving goodbye with one hand, the other holding tight to his blazing comb, and 7 candles burned on the wedding canopy, did you think it was a painting you were looking at? You can tear up your lecture notes now, erase every phone number under my name, and go shopping in someone else's suitcase. I've changed my address again. And don't waste your money on bilingual roadmaps. After a 6-day ocean voyage, a train ride, and 3 metro transfers, you'd only find nights where the breath churns to snow after dark, and a bench with a man making blankets of his arms, his wife in her black wool nightgown, and a 3-legged cat in her lap. And then, would you recognize me? This poem, Casa de Pollos, was written when I was living in Spain, and it's really taken from a very real experience of going to get chicken out in the country. That where we lived, you had to hitchhike everywhere to get things. There weren't stores, and it was our wedding anniversary, and it was like right in the heat of summer, and everything was plaguing us, poison water and flies and mosquitoes, and I somehow wanted to make it special, and it was very hard to think of how to do it, and the only thing I could think of was to go and hitchhike to this chicken lady's house and get chicken and make a fried chicken dinner, and that was the big event. So this poem is based on going to her house. Casa de Pollos. The August wind rides Spain tonight in a fierce saddle, its maddened spurs of weather jabbing me on to the chicken lady's house, where the inside roof is pink and the rafters hang with yellow feet of hens, the silenced beaks, the glazed eyes of young cocks. I pass through her door. The chicken lady darts through the room in a trail of blood and dries her red hands on a splattered apron front. Her collar is a ruff of white feathers that fits tightly around her neck, screws her eyes to quick yellow jots of chicken feed. "We celebrate love tonight," I tell her, clutching my purse with its coins for sweet chicken. "We want rooster flesh tonight," I say, tasting its strut already in its hot blood. Her hands are yellow claws. She carries them to the coop concealed like weapons and curls them around the neck of a shrieking cock. "The wind is a white chicken wing," she says, "for death to flap in on. But I carry the knife." This poem is called Poem in Which My Legs Are Accepted, and it's sort of autobiographical, of course. And it's a great turning point in my life. And now and then when I'm talking to students or teaching them, I do like to read this because, you know, I think everyone that I've ever really gotten close to, it turns out, has this thing that they think is really just terrible about themselves. You know, it's a nose or, you know, straight hair or curly hair. Or it's something, and it's always, like, incredibly out of proportion, usually when you're in high school, and then you sort of, you know, depending on how sane you are, you finally you're able to laugh, you know, 50 years later. Anyway, this poem came out of that. Legs, how we have suffered each other, never meeting the standards of magazines or official measurements. I've hung you from trapezes, sat you on wooden rollers, pulled and pushed you with the anxiety of taffy, and still you are yourselves. Most obvious imperfection, blight on my fantasy life, strong, plump, never to be skinny or even hinting of the svelte beauties in history books or Sears catalogs. Here you are, solid, fleshy, and white as when I first noticed you, sitting on the toilet, spread softly over the wooden seat, having been with me only 12 years, yet as obvious as the legs of my 30-year-old gym teacher. Legs, oh, that was the year we did acrobatics in the annual gym show. How you split for me, one-handed cartwheels from this end of the gymnasium to the other, ending in double splits. Legs, you flashed in blue rayon slacks my mother bought for the occasion, and though you were confidently swinging along, the rest of me blushed at the sound of clapping. Legs, how I've worried about you, not able to hide you, embarrassed at beaches in high school when the cheerleader's slim brown legs spread all over the sand with the perfection of bamboo. I hated you, and still you have never given out on me. With you, I have risen to the top of blue waves. With you, I have carried food home as a loving gift when my arms began ungelling like madrelaine. Legs, you are a pillow, white and plentiful with feathers for his wild head. You are the endless scenery behind the tense, sinewy elegance of his two dark legs. You welcome him joyfully and dance. And you will be the locks in a new canal between continents. The ship of life will push out of you and rejoice in the whiteness, in the first floating and rising of water. A couple years ago, I started writing, just sort of letting the things that came up into my mind make their own connections in the poetry, instead of sort of knowing ahead of time what it was I wanted to write about. I suppose that goes on with every poet, but with me, it was a very different thing, a kind of trust in deciding that, you know, whatever was happening, whatever was coming up must somehow have a linking together. And I'd like to read you a couple poems from that kind of thing. I'm still sort of writing that way. Doesn't mean that afterwards you don't knock out things, but it's sort of the process of the writing itself. This is called Reaching Out Poem. You cut your hair and it made me very shy. I wondered if you were rich that year you pretended to be poor. I wanted to please you. Do you know how many days I thought of it? Your hair as a roof might have been a comfortable relationship, but now that you've grown it, we don't speak the same language. I don't care about the alphabet, only accents. If a person's from Oklahoma, I assume we understand each other. If I said to you, "Hey, you and down yonder in that sharp outfit," you might smile if you had been a child there. But I keep forgetting history. My Colorado friends climbed mountains together, the hunt. All that meat cut and wrapped in butcher paper and stored for winter in the town freezer. Elk steak, venison roast. If I sang Live Wires for Jesus, a whole line of pictures would start moving through their heads, drawn in crayon at tables in the church back room where it was cold. I am talking about understanding, and I think my life has gone wrong. I mean, wanting the wrong things, but not even admitting it. Thank you. And this is another poem that came out of that kind of writing. It's called The Baker's Daughter. "Personal things is all I care about," she said. "He wouldn't be personal. That's why I changed hearts. Parts of me ache. But when our legs touch, I know what we have in common, we loving too. And pancakes, the joy they bring is what I wanted to tell most. We made a crack in the wall to whisper through. That's personal. Or the dream, his skin full of blood. You've been crying," I said. I gave him sympathy because I wanted sympathy from him. I thought I was good, but it was lonesome. I woke up full of lonesome. I wanted to be personal. So I lit the oven," she said. This poem has to do, it's called Because of the Silence, and it has to do with a kind of depression that I think everyone goes into now and then, where it's sort of, you, it's just a heavy, leaden feeling that you can't seem to get out of and connect with life. It's not any specific thing, at least you haven't discovered what it is that has gotten you there, but the poem has to do with wanting to somehow break out of it and reconnect with something sort of that turns you on, anything. It's called Because of the Silence. Hands on the screen door, unable to open it. 6 weeks of silence, then pressure. Feeling hollows in me now, cold grays of May month near the end when it rains afternoons. I am lonely for my life, and think there is hope in naming you as you stand by the Hudson in winter, large and wool-wrapped, listening to the ice move, listening to your heart move. How do you live with the weight these times? Dive under ice, submerge, bathe in, become the rush of water? My heaviness can't remember how to float. On Sunday, intending to mount and ride for an hour, I wandered, waiting for the horse to return from running free in the hill grass. There was a cage of peacocks behind the barn, a male and female circling beyond the wire. He had spread his erotic fan, holding back nothing. Peacock blue, the feathers shook and connected, desiring to dazzle her, eyes darting black from blue. His stiffened neck spoke a beautiful intention. She was oblivious, digging the dirt with her claws, pecking at corn. I found them so and wanted to yell, "Fool!" at her. Then the horses came, and I rode a brown one straight into the forest, hoping to touch my life. How's my time going? Okay. I wrote a series of poems called Blues for Sylvia, and I'd like to read one of them. I guess it was sort of triggered by Sylvia Plath's death and things that were happening in my own life. And this is number 3. Each day that I turn away from myself, I take a step backwards. Look how the hour gets fat like a vein hardening from lack of exercise, from the rich white fat of animals glossing my inside narrowness. The channels of the body always moving. Is it forwards or backwards from the heart? Today I will comb my hair. Shall I make the bed? Today I will put on my green velvet dress with the glass beads tossing against it. Today my name is Sylvia, name like a river. I can float in it forever, or drown, or move my arms though the water makes the velvet soggy, as if my life were that weight on my limbs pulling. As if, and is. The truth is I am lost and have misplaced my list of accomplishments. My father disappeared on the road 4 months ago. Then my first child, the size of a tulip bulb, still buried in winter, left me for the river. I feel lonesome and have no plan. This poem was written in Mexico when I was pregnant, and it's called Waiting, and it there's sort of a terrible, I mean, it's mostly great when you're pregnant, but a terrible thing when you're just waiting and waiting and waiting, and sort of you can't concentrate on anything, and you know, you have all this time when you could be doing all these things, but your mind just sort of goes into this large blur, and boredom becomes a real problem. And also, I think being in Mexico, which I loved very much, still not being home at this particular time made the pressure even worse, and this poem came out of that. The long pull of muscle in the back of the legs tunes from walking the hill at midnight. I can feel only this physical stretching, but otherwise blend into the room like a piece of old furniture. What is this gray life I continually kick from? You are now the length of my finger. Your head is fruit-shaped and succulent with juices. At the edge of humanness, you are ready to feel the blood in your wrists, which are flat as fins. I'm waiting to be needed. O son, O daughter, where are your mysteries? Could I have guessed it, this house, my head, so empty and badly carpentered, that boredom leaks through its rafters? My healthy feet are waiting to take me to uncharted mountains. Arrive with your anger, new life in me. And these are two little poems that sort of are after that, and they're about like 2 days before the event, and then I was really waiting. And they have a different, I think they even have a different intensity or rhythm behind them. They're like shorter lines and quicker. There are actually two poems, but I have them linked together called Poems for the New. And in a way, they're more joyous because it seems more real at this point. One, we're connecting, foot under my rib. I'm sore with life. At night, your toes grow, inches of the new. The lion prowls the sky and shakes his tail for you. Pieces of moon fly by my kitchen window, and your father comes riding the lion's back in the dark to hold me, you, in the perfect circle of him. Two, voluptuous against him, I am nothing superfluous, but all, bones, bark of him, root of him, take. I am round with his sprouting, new thing, new thing. He wraps me, the sheets are white, my belly has tracks on it, hands and feet are moving under this taut skin. In snow, in light, we are about to become. I'd like to read a couple new poems, and they're, you know, like they're not great finished poems and all that. They're just new. And there's something very nice about reading things that haven't settled. They're both out of a very joyful experience of some friends long ago coming unexpectedly to visit. And, you know, a lot of times when you see people that you knew 15 or 10 years ago, it's sort of horrible because you've both changed so much, or in this case, four people, and it just, you know, it's very grim. You sort of get through the hour or something. And this was just the opposite. Like, everything was just fabulous, you know. And we spent a weekend going up to Bolinas and Muir Woods and all those beautiful places. And it seemed like the girl in this case is loves to cook and is wild about food. And it seems that all these food images kept getting into these poems. So if you're wondering how they got there, you know, how you... Sometimes when you're talking about with other people who've been to Paris, and you spend 2 hours just talking about the food. It was that kind of thing. It's a very sort of joyful and very basic and real experience, I think, you know, of being human. It's this great joy with food or wine or whatever. This is called nasturtiums. All the muscles of my forehead lean in and lock to grip you. Hello, with glee. Why are you leaving when your body's touched so lovingly on the rug? Two nasturtiums, that bright, with green qualities, leafy, as we stretched in the forest and your hearts became pine at the top parts. Oh, friends, we need more trees. Don't go. But your lust for sleeping bag softness calls, and the highway south, small fish. Oh, the shininess of fire trucks is a pull unresistible. Yet I entreat you old-fashionedly. Prepare your lasso with speed and hunger. I'm looking for a hill. Will you burn there? Our words throw out lines to the sea. And the other one is called Friends. You appeared like a tidal wave rising at my window. Now you recede with the sadness of low tide. And if I am ashore, there is dampness still to touch, new bits of wood washed up to remind me of your absence. Oh, blonde and rust-colored friends, your frying pan sputters with fish sliding over greased metal. Surely it is holy, this hunger we share. See how the stove anticipates our fire and the salad abundantly brings forth fresh mushrooms, new to your tongue. No regrets, but appetite rising as I envision you speeding in your bus through Brussels sprouts, avoiding their soggy tradition. My pen feels glamorous with energy. I can't run out of ink, and I send you a gift of it.